Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, November 18th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and it's read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. When therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away unto the city to buy meat. Then saith the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence then hast thou that living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself, and his children, and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst, but the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Jesus saith unto her, Go, call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and said, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband. In that saidst thou truly. The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messias cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. Jesus saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. And upon this came his disciples, and marveled that he talked with the woman. Yet no man said, What seekest thou, or why talkest thou with her? The woman then left her water pot, and went her way into the city, and saith to the men, Come, see a man which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? Then they went out of the city, and came unto him. In the meanwhile his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. But he said unto them, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Therefore said the disciples one to another, Hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, My meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. Say not ye, There are yet 4 months, and then cometh harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages, and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth, and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that whereon ye bestowed no labor. Other men labored, and ye are entered into their labors. And many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him for the saying of the woman which testified, He told me all that ever I did. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them. And he abode there 2 days. And many more believed because of his own word, and said unto the woman, Now we believe, not because of thy saying, for we have heard him ourselves, and know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Now after 2 days he departed thence and went into Galilee. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet hath no honor in his own country. Then when he was come into Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all the things that he did at Jerusalem at the feast, for they also went unto the feast. So Jesus came again into Cana of Galilee, where he made the water wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. When he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went unto him and besought him that he would come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Then said Jesus unto him, Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe. The nobleman saith unto him, Sir, come down ere my child die. Jesus saith unto him, Go thy way, thy son liveth. And the man believed the word that Jesus had spoken unto him, and he went his way. And as he was now going down, his servants met him and told him, saying, Thy son liveth. Then inquired he of them the hour when he began to amend, and they said unto him, Yesterday, at the 7th hour, the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at the same hour in the which Jesus said unto him, Thy son liveth. And himself believed, and his whole house. This is again the second miracle that Jesus did when he was come out of Judea into Galilee.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or announcements tonight? And by the way, I did find that quote.
Okay, I have one question first, and then why don't you do the quote?
Okay.
It's a short question. It says, In a jury trial, when picking a jurist, is cross-examining the jurist by the attorneys representing the two parties common practice?
Well, yeah, I think it is, to some degree anyway. I think they ask a lot of inappropriate questions that they shouldn't be asking, and that's part of the process and the way that they get to stack these juries, number one. The most important way that for us to understand how they stack the juries is by the handbooks they give them. They give them jurist handbooks, and also they give them, which has a lot of false or bad information, at least on the federal level. I haven't gone through the state levels. There's 50 states. So, but the other thing is also the questionnaire. They're given a questionnaire to get a lot of information. And through that, really, they're kind of trying to figure out where or what kind of a case they might want to stick these people into. Again, that's stacking the jury. So, for instance, they'll ask people if they have weapons or anybody in the house has a weapon. And they may even go as far, and I think they do ask, how about anybody in your family, not necessarily living with you, that maybe has a gun. The other thing is what news or what newspapers they read, and all of that is a tell on individuals of their, really their perspectives, and that's one of the ways that they, you know, stack the juries. But yeah, there's a lot of inappropriate questions asked jurors, you know, I did do some. I don't know whether I wrote a paper on this or not, but I remember taking some notes on it. I don't know if I ever got a paper out on it. I'll have to take a look to see once on what kind of questions might be appropriate and of course point out some questions maybe that are inappropriate. But anyway, I guess that's about it on that. Okay, are there any other questions?
Nope, that was the only question tonight, John.
Okay, yeah, we did have a question concerning a case, Rodriguez versus Donovan. That's come up a couple of times, and Jan reminded me tonight of that question earlier this evening, and so I went to see if I could find it to put it up here, and I thought maybe I got it from Black's Law, but I didn't. It is a U.S. case, though. I'm not sure exactly where I pulled this case from, but this is it here, Rodriguez versus Donovan. And it is a U.S. Supreme Court, it's for the appeals on the Ninth Circuit. So this is the first level up before you would try to move actually into the full Supreme Court in itself. But anyway, that's where this case is located at. And in order to really find this citation, you really want to put in all of the identifying numbers that will help you to get to this. Maybe put this in here, that would help it. Although I had U.S. Department of Labor, because this case came up from the U.S. Department of Labor. Let's see, it might have been, Rodriguez versus Ray Donovan. Yeah, it's a Department of Labor case. But in any event, it did enter into the appellate court and heard on the Ninth District. So one of the Supreme Court justices would have heard this case, or one of the judges that he has in his group, whatever, might have heard this case. So, okay. Hey, Terry, can you hear me? Terry?
Her mic wasn't working earlier tonight, John. She probably can't talk.
Okay. Yeah, I see one of them says no audio. I was wondering if she had two coming in two different ways.
Yeah, she can hear you. But
okay.
She can't talk to you.
All right. Yeah, we'll let it go. All right. By the way, the queue is open. If anybody has any questions or comments or any corrections to offer, we'll try to get into the queue a little early tonight. Let me see if I can get over there. Yeah, we've got three people in the queue right now. So anybody else wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6 and 1. And if you're on an app or a browser, you should be able to find a button there to enter into the queue and push that. Okay, before we get started onto the queues, the Q&A here, I want to go over to, on our front page, we did have, I think I mentioned this last week, we had two papers that were returned. We sent as far as our case to the Supreme Court. It's a presentment with an order to the United States Supreme Court. And we filed and served that on the 10th. Oh, I'm sorry, the 11th, not the 10th. But it was last month on the 11th. So it's been well over 30 days now that they've received it. We have not got the case back by the United States Supreme Court. That's good news. To be this long, is usually they respond pretty quickly. They reject these papers very quickly. And usually we get it back within a week. So being that we're moving on 5 weeks now, that's a good sign. But we also filed it in all of the circuit courts. So all of the justices within their respective circuits, they were served a copy of this also that way, so that kind of a redundant serving, so that if the Supreme Court had sent it back, at least, you know, maybe it would go through their circuit. And two doorkeepers, actually it was three, two from the same circuit. So anyway, but two of the papers did return. I did send a letter to those two individuals, and we copied everyone that we've been copying and filing papers and serving them on. So I'd like to just take a quick look at that letter and just maybe quickly read it. It's a short letter. And again, it copied everyone. We copied, of course, the United States Supreme Court. This went out, on the 13th. So that's 5 days ago, so they've got it now. And the two that sent back, again, they were the doorkeepers, not necessarily the justices. The justices may not even be aware of this paper. I think they are now, though. I think we've sent it to enough individuals and also to all of the circuits. And like I said, so, you know, I'm sure they're aware of this paper. And there's probably, they got to be talking about it because it's a pretty bold paper to begin with. I think it's a powerful paper. And it's a paper that can't be, there's no way that they'll be able to rebut what we put together on our papers. But anyway, we did copy, here it is, yeah. The Associate Justice Samuel Alito, okay, and the other one was Brett Kavanaugh. So those are the two circuits that the doorkeepers sent back. So we sent the letter. I'm going to read this letter. We sent this letter to both of them, but like I said, we copied everybody. We also mentioned the names of the clerks. I don't remember why there are two clerks. There's Christina Gardner and Lyle Casey for Associate Justice Samuel Alito. And then there was Patricia Dogzewicz for Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, on October 10th, 2024, we the people, via our unalienable right of government by consent through a free and independent grand jury served upon the United States Supreme Court and each independently via their respective Court of Appeals circuits for an unprecedented extraordinary presentment and an order to the United States Supreme Court being the overseers of the federal judiciary, Article 3, Section 1, concerning treason at the highest level. You were warned that all officers of the court or clerk that avert this presentment from reaching the Supreme Court justices by removing, mutilating, concealing, or covers up by any trick, scheme, or device these material facts herein, thereby prevented this presentment from reaching the justices of the United States Supreme Court in violation of 18 U.S.C. subsection 2071, will be liable for aiding and abetting pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 2381 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2, whereas notice to agent is notice to principal. They will be held accountable. The grand jury pre-agreed that any doorkeeper, clerk, that violated 18 U.S.C. 2071 would be indicted for violating U.S.C. 2381 and 18 U.S.C. subsection 2 for treason. We were clear that this presentment was not a complaint, not a petition, not a prayer. It is a demand by the sovereigns that vested you with their power under Article 3, Subsection 1, and Subsection 2. Because esquires and clerks are trained in civil law and ignorant to the common law of the land, we grace you with 20 days from the above said date to go to nationallibertyalliance.org and download a copy of the presentment that you return to this honorable body and deliver a copy to Associate Justice Samuel Alito and Associate Justice Brett Kavanaugh, after which notify us at the above address of your compliance. Failure to comply will result in indictment for treason. Take judicial notice. We the people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of persons themselves entrusted to dispense justice. In the Supreme Court case of the United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government, governed and administered directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. It is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge with the power to investigate criminal wrongdoings. And it was sealed and signed by the grand jury foreman. We copied the United States Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Brown Jackson, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Amy Barrett, Justice Eleanor Kagan, Justice Neil Gorsuch, Justice Clarence Thomas, U.S. Army Advocate General, U.S. Navy Judge Advocate General, Air Force Inspector General, National Guard, NORAD, U.S. NORTHCOM, President Donald J. Trump, Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch, Donald Trump Jr., Robert F. Kennedy, Cash Patel, Senator Mike Lee, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator John Kennedy, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Josh Hawley, Senator J.D. Vance, Congressman Mike Johnson, Congressman Jim Jordan, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor, Congressman Matt Gaetz, Congressman Steve Scalise, Congressman Andy Briggs, Congressman Chip Roy, Congressman Eli Crane, Congressman Corey Mills, Congressman Jim Banks, Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, and Tulsi Gabbard. Okay, so those are all the people we copied. They're also all the people, of course, that we copied the original presentment, and we put a letter in for each one of those individuals, depending on, you know, what they were. In some cases, they were elected individuals. In some cases, they were not. So we wrote the letters appropriately. But anyway, when we started working this process of filing papers to the Supreme Court, we did come together with an agreement to indict anyone who rejected and removed papers or did anything that would prevent the papers from going forward. And we had put quite a few indictments together. You can read about those indictments and get some information on that. We did copy Jeff Sessions and Barr, depending on who was in the office at the time that this case was going on. So the federal court case, if you went to a federal court case and you went through, you'll see all of the different people that we did indict, quite a few judges, a lot of federal judges, some state judges, and maybe some other people, I don't remember particularly, but we indicted quite a few people. There was also a lot of rejections. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that every single paper we did send to them, they never returned them, but they also never responded. And we started filing in 2015, and we also opened up a court case just for a place to deposit our paperwork up on the Northern District here in New York. And of course, again, filing it with the Attorney General. Again, back then it was Sessions and then Barr. So this was our final paper, and hopefully people have read through this paper. It's a very powerful paper, I believe. It's a very important paper. It's the finale, and it's the order. We've given them plenty of time, plenty of information. As a matter of fact, we've given them 9 years. 9 years of paperwork is what we've been doing here. And I just like to take a quick look at this to make a point that I didn't read when we looked at this. Let's see if I can find this. Let me click on it again here. On the top of this paper, we wrote, silence can only be equated with fraud, where there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. So just being silent makes them fraud. Now, we don't expect that they might answer this paper very quickly because, it's a very explosive time, which is probably an understatement. And things have to take place. I do perceive that this paper will have some power and some clout. By the time we get to the end of whatever it is that's going to happen, we do know that we should be bracing for impact, as a matter of fact, because something is going to happen. These people are not going to give up, this easily. They face death, a lot of these people, because of treason, and long-term jail sentences for many of them. And there's a lot going on. You know, we know that we have a lot of videos that's going to be released soon, a lot of information that's going to be released. It may not be the videos might be released a little early. I do see some things coming out. But I think we're going to get a flood at some point, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on these people. We do know that Biden is pursuing assaulting through Ukraine, of course, Russia, and have given them permission and I guess supplied them with long-range missiles that could reach deep into Russia and hit the Moscow and other major cities in Russia. If that happened, that could spark off World War III. But he gave the okay to Ukraine to use those missiles. Ukraine is ignoring the whole fact as far as whatever Trump has to say, and said they don't care what Trump says. So it's going to be interesting to find out what's going on. But that is a problem. It's a major problem. I don't know how that's going to end up. It may end up pretty bloody before we get to the end of that. We do know that there's going to be unrest in the cities here across America. We've been watching it over in Europe and various places for quite some time now, and it's reached America. We have millions of illegal aliens. Again, I've heard as many as 20 million. I've heard as little as, I think, 11 million. So whatever that number may be, okay, a lot of these people are serious criminals, dangerous criminals. And you know, some of them are probably trained in warfare. So, again, that's something is going to happen. We don't know what, but, again, the calm before the storm is where we're at right now. And we should be ready for that. Okay, let me see if there's anything else before we get going. Yeah, I'd like to remind everybody, you know, to get those committees of safety going. You know, people do not deserve anything that they don't work for. We really don't. I mean, of course, a gift is one thing, but even gifts must be worked for to keep it. We've been given the gift of liberty. Liberty is so deep that people don't even realize how much liberty they have. To understand the point or the fact that we the people are sovereign, that we the people are the lawmakers. Think about that. We the people are the lawmakers. That's who we are, okay? We've vested our legislators to write law, particularly on a federal level, in 18 different cases. So we've given them 18 things that they can write law on. And they can't go beyond that. You know, a lot of the things that Trump is going to take out very quickly are things that are unlawful, things that they haven't had the authority. So it's a no-brainer. I listen to these people have debates and talking, oh, the law says this and you can't do that, and he's going to have a tough time. No, there is no tough time. If it's not constitutional, it's null and void. Marbury versus Madison. End of subject, nothing else to talk about. Shutting down the Department of Education, no-brainer. Real easy. It's unlawful. No constitutional authority. And why would a federal government want to control the education of all the people? I don't think I have to answer that question. We certainly know why that would be. You know, the Federal Reserve, no-brainer. Unauthorized, unconstitutional. IRS, no-brainer. Unauthorized, unconstitutional. There's so many, almost everything he's going after. A lot of things. And then the lawful places, you know, they've been corrupted. And we're going to clean them up. That's what Trump is going to do. I'm sure everybody's been listening in to hear all of the things that Trump is going to do. It's just amazing. And all of the individuals that he is bringing in to his cabinet and appointing into other places. Powerful, powerful setup that he's got going here. So we are going to take this nation back. Trump had released the idea that there's going to be a big party on July 4th, 2026, not next year, the year after, that'll be the biggest 4th of July, you know, party, whatever you want to call it, of our history. Because the expectation is the completion of his work, getting everything set and moving back to where it belongs, back under the Constitution, will be accomplished by that. So it's going to take 2 years. But there's, of course, the important things. That's going to be taken very quickly. You know, the economy is a biggie one, has to be dealt with quickly. The border is a biggie one. Dealing with the Justice Department, the FBI, and the other three-letter agencies, they all have to be dealt with. And they have to be dealt with quickly and swiftly and harshly. Boy, they're really complaining. But there's no doubt there's a couple of different ways that Trump can get these people in unaffected by whatever it is that they desire. I'm not going to get into those details. I think Gerard's been looking into this, but I don't see him here tonight. So if he comes in, maybe he'll expound some on that more, that he would know more than I would, certain details that he can articulate. But again, look it. As Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Liberty is not yours to have for free. It costs. Sometimes it costs blood and sweat, tears. But it definitely costs. It costs our time. It costs our... We're required. We must have government by consent of the people. The people must get involved to do this. Because if they don't, we'll be back here again. And we'll just be sending it for our grandchildren or great-grandchildren, and they're going to suffer by our lack of doing anything. So we need to get these committees of safeties going. We need to get them going in every county across America. People need to understand what government by consent means, what power and authority they have, and start executing the fact that we are the lawmakers. Okay? God is the one true sovereign of the universe. But as far as being in this world, his law is the main. It's paramount. The law of God is paramount. But we have the power and the authority to make law to control our government. And that's the law that we wrote when we wrote the Constitution. And we put in, of course, the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our law. It's also a covenant with God. And that laid out that we're under God's law, common law, and we the people ordained, and think of these words, we the people ordained. Who ordained? We the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. We vested them with powers. They are not sovereign beyond their own personal sovereignty as an individual, but in their position of power and authority, we vested them with certain powers. We didn't vest them with the ability to become sovereign, that they could go break the law and won't be held accountable. No way. Marbury versus Madison makes that clear, and many other cases thereafter makes it clear. They don't have that kind of liberty to go do whatever they want and break the law and not be held accountable. They will be held accountable. And National Liberty Alliance, through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, we'll be pushing forward for a lot of things that these people must be held accountable for. But again, the important thing and the important work that we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance is education, teaching people the power and the authority that they have, teaching people government by consent, teaching them the law. And we're not talking about statutes, we're not talking about codes, any of those things. We're talking about the common law. And common law could be very, very easily put into two words, common sense, because that's what common law is. It's just pure common sense. Common sense are maxims, things that cannot be argued or debated. It is what it is. It's a fact. And people need to understand that. And that makes law easy, because we could make it up as we go, as we enter into courts, just by bringing common sense, the argument of the case on the facts, and applying common sense upon it. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. Now, we do have the power and the authority to apply statutes and codes and regulations upon the individuals that are working for government agencies that might be in our case that we're going up against, and we can bring these codes up, just like I brought these codes up here in this letter to these clerks, so we can hold them accountable. Okay, let me see if there's anything else before we go on. I don't think so. Okay, all right, we'll go into our Q&A now. Anybody who has a comment or a question or a correction that they might want to offer us here at National Liberty Alliance, you can get into the queue. If you're on a phone, it's *6 and 1. And if you're on an app or a browser, then you can click on a button. You should find it to be able to get into the queue. The queue is open. Gerard, did you want to bring anything up before we get started to Q&A? Because I know you sent me some info. I don't know if you hear me.
If I could find my mute button. I got lots of different things. I don't want to get started on it yet. I'll just wait and see where the people go. And there's so much stuff going on right now. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, it's a daily, huge number of things happening every day.
Every day.
All great news. Great news.
And moves and counter moves and you know, it's a chess game, and but yet it makes sense if you, and you can filter through it. You kind of can see what's going on. And, but anyway, generally speaking, I think it's going to be good news. You know. And that's
all right,
how
well, a little later in the program, maybe you can pipe in, maybe something will spark up.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Let's take some questions.
Okay.
First person in the queue here is Jeff from Pennsylvania. Jeff, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Jeff from PA. Let me see. You should have been unmuted. Let me try unmuting you directly. Go ahead. You got the mic, Jeff.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Hey. Good, good. I just wanted to ask if you got those links I resent to Jan. You asked me to resend them to you. I sent them.
Yeah, I did look. I looked at some of the stuff, and one of the things I was confused about was a what was that, Jan, in there again? Trying to think of the phrase that was used. Jan, are you still with us? Okay. Anyway, I can't think of the name of the word that I'm looking for, but I was just kind of confused. It looked like you were kind of mixing some other things in together with committees of safety. I mean, we're committees of safety, and we have to really stay focused because, remember, on the political side of things, with Truth and our representatives, we need to be able to work with people in other counties. And because, you know, our representative, for instance, your congressman represents quite a few counties within your state and maybe just pieces of different counties. And so we did a paper and we also did a video on this. Hang on, let me take a quick look right here. And if you go to the Start a Committee of Safety and you come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools, I mean, you can come click on Start a Committee of Safety and follow the breadcrumb trail, and you'll eventually get to this page, maybe three links in. But on this page here, we have all of our handbooks and videos and PowerPoints and a lot of good information. And one of the things I thought I should do is do some short videos on each one of the subcommittees and what exactly these subcommittees are responsible for. And all these subcommittees need to be created by every county committee of safety. There's a lot of other subcommittees that they'll make that, you know, you'll find a situation where you'll create a committee to deal with that situation. And it might stick as one that you'll continue for, you know, for a very long period of time or maybe just solve the problem in a period of time and then no longer need that particular committee. But everybody should belong to a subcommittee. Everybody should be doing something. And let me just read this. I know I read this before, but it's worth reading again. The following series of videos will teach succinctly how to introduce, create, and run a committee of safety. These videos or PowerPoints should be played as your organization, as you organize your committee of safety. You should print out copies of the charter and resolutions to hand out to all committee members, and after playing the videos, discuss additional information you might want to add to those charters and resolutions. You will find that as time goes by, you will add addendums to your charter and resolutions. These videos, PowerPoints, and many other videos, PDFs, MS Words, and many other tools are available below the videos for download. After forming your committee of safety, some members will join after you have played some of all or all of these instructional videos. You should send your new members to nationallibertyalliance.org/handbooks to catch up and be informed of the Committee of Safety's plan, structure, and duties for each subcommittee. So, you know, we did have on our front page, I might have taken it down, but I don't remember. It's probably somewhere else if I did move it. But I put a much more simpler presentment. It's an hour-long presentment. But in any event, this is a good presentment to start off your committee of safety. It should be on your, you know, the first meeting to introduce the people, and we give some other short videos also to play and other things depending on how long your first meeting is going to be, which really should be as something that you're planning a presentment for. It should be at least 3 to 4 hours, and even longer if you want, but it should involve with a lot of information. But the first order of business is to present government by consent, which is exactly what the committees of safety do. You can't really have committee of safety unless you're working with other, I mean, you can't have government by consent unless you're working with other people. You know, one person is an island. You know, united we stand, divided we fall. So we have to be united. We have to work together to take control. We have to have power and authority to be able to deal with these people we put into office, to be remove these people by recall when they just won't obey the Constitution and the will of the people. And so people need to know how to do all those things. They need to know how to recall. They need to know a lot, and they need to know the law. They need to have an education. People need to be sent to National Liberty Alliance to get that education. National Liberty Alliance, we mention this often enough, we have a hands-off policy. All committees of safety are free and independent. They can do whatever they want. But we strongly suggest to follow the structure, because you will have to work with other committees of safety next door to you or across the state, and eventually state to state. It's the there's no other way. You've got to be able to do that. And so certain things we're working with, we want to take back the education of our children. The most important thing, in my opinion, is bringing a proper education and stop the demoralization of our children. So that's extremely important, and you got to get control of that. We lay out a plan to do that. But anyway, first video is it presents the government by consent. On the next meeting, you should play the Committee of Safety Charter and the Committee of Safety Resolutions. Those are short videos, they're not very long, but you play those two videos and then discuss it and start getting people involved to see if they have other ideas. That's why you want to hand out a copy, a written copy to everyone also, so that they have that and they can start making their own notes. And then they can pick up on that conversation in the next meeting also when they have time to think about it. Okay, so you have to create a charter. You have to create a resolution. You know, we really are not coming with power and authority and laying things out and making ourselves clear to the individuals that we're trying to take control of, that work for us, those people who represent us, those people who we elected, and those who were appointed. Well, we correct them, and if they don't take the correction, then we go after the person that appointed them, and they're the one that'll be held liable. Get rid of them, you get rid of the appointed individual, too. Then the next thing, of course, after you create your resolution and your charter, is to exercise the sheriff plan, okay? We put together a plan. You have to get a sheriff working with you. They got to understand who you are. They got to understand what it is you're doing, and that's what a charter does, and that's what your resolution does. And it should be filed at the county building, filed in the county, in the records, and then you want to take this copy with an original copy with original signatures with a raised embossed seal on it, and you want to have it bound, and you want to deliver that to the sheriff. This video explains all this, with a copy of the book Government by Consent, and a few copies of the Sheriff's Common Law Handbook, which is extremely important. Okay, and then you want to give him 4 to 6 weeks, I'd say 6 weeks, to kind of, you know, say, hey, we're going to get back to you in a month or so and come to one of our meetings. We'd like to discuss these things with you. So you're putting him on notice. You want him to read this stuff. And when he reads through it, he's going to understand that we're not going to tolerate a sheriff that doesn't know the Constitution, refuses to get educated, and does not uphold the Constitution and protect the people from overstepping governments. And so he's going to know that from reading this information. So he's being primed for that purpose. And hopefully he's a new person by the time he gets to the meeting, because he should become educated. And I put together a list of questions. I don't know whether I have them up here or not, but I'll get them up here if I don't. I did put together a list of questions. And I'm sure people have a lot of more questions that they might want to ask the sheriff. We don't want to embarrass them. But we do want to be stern and complete. I know with my sheriff, our sheriff had passed away about a year ago or so, and we've got the undersheriff, and I was told he was really as good as the sheriff was, and not true. Not true at all. Now, I have my own personal experiences with his office and also some other people who had bad experiences. So from my perspective, my sheriff's got to go. But I got to presume that he's just ignorant, and maybe we can enlighten him. And that is the attitude we have to take. We don't want to embarrass them when they come to the meeting, but we do want to be very direct to them and make sure they're willing to grow. And so if they're willing to learn and do the job that they were elected for, that they don't know what they were really elected for, very few sheriffs understand their powers and authorities and what their purpose is. Very, very few. Very few, practically none of them understand the law. And the law is simple. It's the common law, the law of the land. It's the common law. Common sense. Doesn't get any more difficult than that. And so he needs to start taking, his job more seriously, at least in my county. So we give him the opportunity to become educated. You give him 6 weeks. And then we inform him at the end of the day, if he's not willing to be the sheriff that we, the people, need, we intend on recalling. And the papers actually make that clear, so we shouldn't have to really bring that up. He should already be coming in feeling a little intimidated, as a matter of fact, without embarrassing him, feeling a little intimidated and preparing him for that particular situation. Okay, so meet your sheriff. We have a plan. You have to go through that. You got to get the sheriff on your side, because he's the every time you go to a government office, whether it's a town board or going to visit the legislator, doesn't matter who it is, the sheriff needs to be with you, or one of his deputies. Okay, we need to work together on this. He needs to be willing to do that. We make this clear in our paperwork. So, and these we have handbooks that get more deeper than these videos. The videos are really sort of a help, because it seems a lot of people aren't reading through the books, so we're trying to get, at least through these videos, get the main ideas of what we're trying to do, the major points, and then refer back to the handbooks for further information and ideas and so on and so forth. Then we have the education committee. You don't want to go visit any of the, we have 16 boards of election right here in my county. 16 of them. So we got to visit all 16 of them. And that's K through 12. Then we have the colleges, other institutions that we want to visit, different perspective. We'll have to put a plan together of an idea of what might be done there. But the education committee will build up your committees of safety hugely, because once the parents and the people of the communities within these different election districts come to understand what's going on and what we the people are doing at the committees of safety to bring back our law and order, and also to bring control of our children's education back under the will of the people, okay, and how to deal with these people and remove them from their position if they refuse to do the will of the people. And that's why we need the sheriff with us, with a writ call onto in our back pocket, which gives them 3 days to respond or give up your seat, give up your office. Okay, then we have the Committee of Safety Political Committee. This gets a little specific and a little bit dicey, so it's going to take a little time to really comprehend this, but the way things are broken up within your state and your counties, because there's different political subdivisions and they connect to different counties. So, you got to work together. You got to be structured in a way and work together with other people, because you want to walk papers and bring the proper people. You want to bring statesmen into office, not politicians. National Liberty Alliance has nothing to do with politics. We're all about the political process. Big difference. Parties are damaging and destructive to any republic, especially a common law republic. Now, I'm going to be putting some other videos up here, but these are the important ones for right now that people need to be structuring and working through. And, of course, under here is all the tools, lots of videos and PowerPoints and, PDFs and a lot of things. Every meeting should spend a little bit of time on education. So we got a lot of things. We got memorandums that could be read, or we also have memorandums, I believe, up here. Where might be under here. Your memorandums of law. I think we have some in video. If not, we'll be putting them up in the video. Yeah, we do. Okay, I guess we have 19 of them. I guess put a lot of them together already. So you can play one of these every week. These are important memorandums of law, because once you get through this 20 memorandums, boy, will you have a good understanding of what common law is. And it's not just the videos. We also have, you can download a copy in PDF. I think it's in PDF form. Yep, PDFs. So you can download these memorandums in PDF. So there's a lots of things we can do, lots of things we need to do. If people don't want to do it and they don't feel that they have the time to do it, well, maybe Liberty doesn't have any time for you, because we can't have Liberty unless we work for it. Nothing in this world is for free. Everything requires maintenance and an education in order to achieve. So if we're not willing to do it, then we don't deserve it. It's that simple. And look at people do not know how to have government by consent. People think that going and making a vote, which we learned now don't even count. I've known this for 25 years or 20 years already now. But, you know, people think that that's their way. Well, that's not it. There's a lot more than that. It's called the Committee of Safety, getting involved, taking control from the grassroots level, making sure these people do their job and hold them accountable. So, but anyway, with all that, Jeff, I wanted to get back to you because you had brought this thing up, so I just wanted to kind of put that out there. There was one thing. I mean, it looks like you guys are involved. It looks like, you know, you have your meetings going, and that's good. You're having conversations. You're doing some education. But there was one thing that I didn't understand. Jan, are you back yet? Are you here? Oh, I remember what it was. It's called the assemblies. What's that about? Because from what we heard about assemblies, it's not good. Anyway, that was the only question I had concerning what you might be doing now.
That's just kind of a synonymous for committees of safety, because they also use the phrase committees of safety. I believe I sent you a link.
Yeah, but you don't want to use the assemblies because, look, that first started off, may have started off by other people before her, but Anna von Ritt started that. And then other people sprung off that, and they started getting involved in electing. There's one group that is electing people to be a seat holder. Okay. There's another group that's actually electing people to be holding political positions to be taken over. The original plan on them is to revamp the Constitution. Like we can do that. We have all these great, great thinkers and people of honor to be able to write something like our founding fathers. But there's nothing wrong with our Constitution. We have a very good Constitution. We have a very good Bill of Rights. So we got a lot of good stuff. So when you go to the assemblies and use a word like that, you may confuse people, because people come in with different ideas, and like I said, they're all over the place. And that was the word that confused me. I strongly suggest to stay with committees of safety. You might find resistance from another county that's working in here, the assembly, and they want to work with you because they may understand the problematics, the problems that are with these assemblies. So, anyway, I think you should rethink attaching that to what we're doing.
No, we're not working that manner at all. That was just another word that was used, because that was derived from the First Amendment as the right to assemble, meaning the people's assembly. It's nothing to do with anything that's already existing, like Anna von Ritt or anything like that. No, we're not affiliated with them.
Be careful with it. I think you should be careful with putting that up front with the name Committee of Safety. You know, basically, it should be, you know, for me, for instance, Dutchess County, New York Committee of Safety. Well, actually, it's New York County Committee of Safety. Everybody that way works out well.
Yeah, no, we're not deviating with title or nothing. It's just at times that we met up with somebody out of Ohio named David Roberts, and he actually has Committee of Safety going, and he has it registered with the county in his state. And we actually got 23 counties working with us. We meet weekly now. I think I gave Jim, I give him an invitation every week. I haven't gotten a response from him.
Yeah, I talked to Jan about this earlier today, and I know, how long is your meetings for? He said that it starts at 7:30, I presume that's Eastern time, being Pennsylvania. You're in PA, I believe, yep. So, well, what time and how long does it go for?
Hour and a half.
Okay.
9 o'clock.
Because, you know, I do a Bible study on Wednesdays from 7:30 to 8:30, so If I might be able to drop in last half hour, and Jan might be able to drop in too. So yeah, we'll drop in, check it out, see what's going on.
Everybody's welcome. We're always open to help, corrections or advice, and we also, you know, we're there to help others too that are new to it. But we've just sworn in 8 people, including myself and our committee of safety, to further strengthen and known as de jure. You've probably heard the term de jure means lawful or righteous. Like Robert Overyeil, he was the governor of Illinois. He probably mentioned that a few times on the Thursday night meetings when he's still alive. But he had some issues out there because everybody was against him out there, even though he was doing the right thing. But he was very successful in what he was doing, but apparently his life was caught up short. So, you know, he was a very sought-after gentleman for land patents and all that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
one website you can read more about that on is, it's called Awakening United. It has a whole bunch of sublinks on common law committees and safety court process. You know, it's kind of amiss to what National Liberty Alliance is doing. I thought it's nice because we actually hooked up and that David Roberts actually witnessed the swearing in over Zoom at our in-person meeting last Thursday on video, so we have that recorded. We do have a seal, and we're considering carrying that seal over into the de jure committee of safety or, you know, seeking the embossment upgrade.
Yeah, well, on the original seal that I put together, which we suggest that you might want to copy, and again, uniformity is important. You know, the states that came into the union a little later, you know, they're not as structured to fit as well as the original 13 and some of the earlier ones that came in after the original 13. But if you go to start a committee of safety, and again, you get to the handbooks, videos and tools, we do have a seal. As a matter of fact, this is the seal right here, Dutchess County, New York, Committee of Safety seal, okay? And I think I have something a little different than that. Hang on a second. Recall grand jury BDFs now. Committee. Well, maybe it's up on the first list. Hold on. Resolution seal. Okay, let's see. Okay. Yeah, this is the one. There was 3 rings on the original one I did. But actually, over at Staples, I can only get 2 rings. But this is a committee of safety seal suggested. And, you know, you can put whatever date you want that means something to you. 1776, I thought, was probably the best, you know, because it's the beginning of the common law, you know, the Declaration of our Independence and our covenant with God through that declaration. So I think people should strongly suggest that. But, you know, you can also put other dates that are important to who we are as a people. Maybe the date the Constitution was came forward, 1789, or the Bill of Rights, 1792. But I think 1776 makes a lot of sense. Anyway, back to you.
John, I also emailed that Dave Champion, and I informed him of you, Gerard, or possibly Jan, getting back to him upon you receiving his links, contact links. Did you happen to reach out to him?
Well, I haven't. You know, usually, you know, Jan may try to make a connection. I don't know if he's tried or anything. You know, I believe you sent, or someone sent me a place with a lot of videos. He's got a lot of videos. Is that the same guy? I think Gerard,
yeah,
too. But it was overwhelming for me. I don't have time to listen to a lot of those videos. It's hard for me to keep up in the news and keep up on my work as it is, so it's difficult for me to spend a lot of time anywhere else unless it's really important that I do so, you know. But, yeah, you know, it could be a good conversation.
Well, he needs the authority on the income tax, the truth. Now, a lot of people have misconception income tax is illegal. It's not that it's illegal, it's misapplied. It doesn't apply to us in the several states. It applies to people in D.C. and foreign persons. He'll clarify that if you ever meet with him.
Well, yeah, I know that, and that is only because of the way they wrote USC 26, and they work out and call in the states District of Columbia, and therefore that's where that idea comes in. But the bottom line, though, is it's a direct tax. The Constitution forbids a direct tax. And any territory that we might be responsible for and people might be living there, you know, we can't make them secondhand citizens. You know, if we got some power and authority over them and some control over their government because they're part of, you know, a district that we have control over, you know, we don't want to apply things that are unlawful, like a direct tax upon them, because that's slavery. Direct tax is slavery. That's exactly what it is. I do understand why he makes that point. I do agree with the point. If you're going to go verbally and just look at what they wrote, one of the problems, of course, is, you know, their USC 26, it's got... you know, its own dictionary inside of it, the meaning of phrases and words. So with the United States of America, for instance, it really means District of Columbia, and refers to the 50 states and calls that the District of Columbia here and so on and so forth. So whenever you see United States of America, you know, we're really saying the District of Columbia. But we're hiding it onto you because we're thieves and we're frauds, and we're defrauding you, and that's what we're doing to you, and we're taking your money and enslaving you. That's what's going on, of course. But I do agree his thinking and conclusion by written word that they've got.
The problem is most people follow as U.S. persons, and that's what it is. They're following someone whom they're not. They're actually committing perjury because they're swearing to a falsehood with their signature. And also, if you go to chapter, you know, section 7701, that is the definitions. In state and states, plural still refers to the federal possessions. And whenever it does call out the several states, like in petroleum tax, it expressly says several states, which is us, you know, the other, the outside states. But, yeah, it's worth clarification. But it just, it's so convoluted. They do it deliberately to mislead people into being defrauded because they're not going to stand up when they see all these terms that look like, because even if you read his book, Shattering the Myths, the Congress in tax law, regulatory law, has the power to redefine anything it wants, but it has to stay within the jurisdiction of tax law. It cannot come out into the 50 states generally, like Noah's Webster's Dictionary.
Well, USC 26 also says within inside itself that it's not law. And it is, you know, if you go and look up, for instance, the different codes, and you get to the codes, there are some codes that are not law, okay, and it's very clear that it has not been affected as law. USC 26 is not law, and it says so right within it. I've used that in a court case. And the thing about the big thing about this right now is we know that direct tax is unlawful, it's unconstitutional, it's clearly written up in the Constitution, no direct tax, that's it, number one. Number two, the bank, the Federal Reserve, is owned by foreign bankers. That's against the law also. You can't. Foreigners cannot own our banks. There are a couple of things that they can't own. They also can't own our utilities, although they do. A company, I believe, out of Canada actually owns the utility, at least the Central Hudson. They own that. You know, they also got private owners for the post office. Again, all unlawful. All this can be just taken down. And Trump talks about, I haven't heard him talk about the post office yet, but Trump does talk about this, and he says he's getting rid of it right away, day one. You listen to the enemy saying, oh, he can't do that. There's this and there's laws and there's that. No, they're all unlawful laws because the Constitution clearly says it can't be, and that's the end of that. So he's going to kill the bank, and that's gone. And the IRS is gone because it's a direct tax, tax on your property tax, that's gone. It's all unlawful, can't happen. And so big change coming.
You know, I got something to say. I'm glad you went there, John, because people want to argue about income tax when they don't really understand the total picture of what it is. they say, oh, it's voluntary. Yeah, because you signed a W-2 or the W-4, so that brought you into their jurisdiction because they didn't explain it to you. It's fraud. And what people don't understand is the personal income tax doesn't go for one bit of infrastructure. It goes into the interest on the debt, which goes into those bankers' pockets. So it's you know, they go, oh, how are we going to run the country if we don't have income tax? Guess what? We'll run it a lot better because they won't be stealing from us. So, you know, it's a pig. You can put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig. So let's not split hairs about, you know, whether the laws, you know, they did write it so it wasn't unconstitutional, but the way they went around putting it on the people was fraud. And they tell you it's voluntary, but meanwhile there's not an employer out there that'll hire you and pay you without a W-2 or W-4. So it's the biggest fraud that's ever been put on the people ever. And it's only because people don't understand what John just explained about how these taxes are and how they're unconstitutional to begin with. Now, look at our right to, you know, as a corporation or from business to business, my right to contract with you is unlimited. So if I want to call myself something and pay a fee to you, you know, that's my business. But they're telling us that you have to do it, and that's a lie. Anyway, I yield.
You don't even have to have a business license under common law.
You know, let me just make another point to add onto what Gerard just said. You know, look at all the money that they collect, every dime that they collect. Let's just take this last year. Every dime they collected last year, there was interest. It didn't even put a dent in the debt. It's just interest. And what they use that interest any way they please. And that's how they fund all of the different things to destroy this nation, is with that money. So we're paying for them to destroy America.
All the black ops.
Yeah. But back to you, Jeff. A couple of just another minute or so. We got other people we got to get moving on. So, but you can have a final word.
In regards to that direct tax, I have a little obstacle here with known as the per capita tax, head tax here in PA, at least Western PA. I know that's not traditionally applied, and how to get away from that, because that's just anyone 21 years of age, regardless of income, job, or where they live, it's imposed upon.
Well, that kind of a tax, per capita tax, you know, I was discussing this a couple of years back with Brent, and I gave him my perspective on what I thought, because it's really not that clear, but it logically it's clear. My conclusion was clear, and he agreed with that. He says he was thinking the same way, and that is, if they apply a tax on the head of each individual, then they take the entire population, and just to make it simple, we'll call it, I'm just going to call it 1,000 people, okay, just to make it simple. So there's 1,000 people they have to collect a tax on, and they may say, okay, we need to pay $5 for each head. So that's $5,000 that they have to give to the federal government for whatever. And again, there's a purpose for that. It provides money for certain things that are necessities. And so but it's the state that has to collect that money through lawful taxes. For instance, I know in my county, I believe it's 8.25% sales tax. Anything you buy is a sales tax on it. There's other taxes too, other lawful taxes, but that's the biggie. So every dime, every dollar that's spent in this county, there's a tax put on top of that 8.5, I believe it is 8.25. So 8.25%, I believe it is put on top of anything that's sold. So that money that's collected, then there's also the road tax, and there's all kinds of other taxes. But that's a lot of money. And that's where they would collect the money. They may say, well, okay, we're going to have to move it from 8.25 to 8.28% or 8.3%, whatever it is, in order to get the money to pay. But it cannot be a direct tax. It's got to be a tax that can be avoided.
Participate or not.
Huh?
You can participate or not by not purchasing.
Exactly.
So, awful.
And you can also barter things with other people that have what you want. You have what they want. There's lots of other different things you could do, and all of that stuff is not taxable, so can't be recorded, can't be found anyway. So, all right, we got to move on, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Very much.
Thank you. Okay, let's take the next person in the queue here. It's, let's see. See if I can get the button to work here. Well, I lost that person. Whoever I kicked out, if you pop back in, I'll get you next. But I don't know why it went like that. But right now, FW, you got the mic.
Can you hear me? Yeah, can you hear me?
Go right ahead.
Okay, hi. So first of all, thank you for explaining that about the tax, the income tax, because that's like first layer is, oh, yeah, it's actually written for D.C., you know, government. But we have to look behind that and say, well, is that even a lawful thing? If that's discrimination, just because you know, live in a territory or because you work in this kind of job, I mean, you call it slavery. It is a form of discrimination. You get taxed, but you don't. That's the first thing. The second thing, my understanding is that prior to the income tax, there was just tariffs and sales tax. And, you know, we did just fine. So, and of course, Donald Trump wants to bring back the tariffs. So that was, to some extent, arguably unnecessary. It was just another burden that they put on people by directly taxing them. So if there's anything wrong with what I just said, feel free to comment, correct. But that wasn't what I actually wanted to say. So is that okay, first of all?
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. And let me ask you a question. I heard that the meeting this Thursday, I thought we were going to be taking over all the next meetings through Christmas, but do you know who's coming up to speak next?
I believe it's, I forget the name of the person, someone with Pacific Justice.
And what's that about, do you know?
I'll take a look at my emails while we're talking to see if they may have already announced it. I'll take a look. Okay. And then also Bobby Ann Cox, who was involved with the quarantine camps and the proposed law by Hochul to throw anyone that they want to, that they suspect is sick, you know, with no proof or anything, throw them into, remove them any, you know, age,
right.
Either lock them down or remove them, and no method of getting out, no prescribed method of getting out.
Yeah, I don't think we have to worry about that too much right now anymore. I think these people are up in a corner, they got a problem, and, you know, they're on the defense at this point, so... but in any event, you know, I'm going to try to make it for that meeting. Send me a copy of what they sent you, because I guess I'm not on the list yet. Maybe you could send me a copy, because I had this number, but I lost it. Barbara's phone number.
Barbara, so sure.
Yeah, just maybe in an email, when you forward the email, just give me your number so that I
can... Her number as well. Sure. Okay.
All right, go back to you on your question or comments or whatever.
Yeah, my question was, because I came on a few minutes late and you were talking about the jury and how they ask all those intrusive questions, and you're absolutely right. If they ask questions like, you know, what kind of media do you consume, that gets them a ping on who you are.
Yeah, they get to know your attitude on gun laws, and
right.
You have a gun.
Well, my question is, can you just simply leave it blank and not answer those?
Well, the thing is they're not going to select you to come in, obviously. This has all got to be done away with. It's got to be fixed. And I did a paper on this, and the paper's also been filed with a paper that we sent out to the Supreme Court, to the presentment. So we have to address all these problems and bring back the control of the juries back to the people, which I covered that also. I think it's 21 or 22 points that were covered in this paper, that the court needs to recognize, acknowledge, and back off and open the courts of justice again. And basically, I mentioned earlier, if you didn't hear it, it's kind of good news because we haven't had our papers sent back, and we're on week 5 now since we sent it.
Okay. All right. Well, that was it. That was my question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll take our next call. Hopefully, I don't kick them out. I think, let me go down here to the bottom, gray. Looks like Amanda, 405. Let me do you first because you got kicked out. Go ahead, right here. What state are you from? I think it's Amanda, right?
Yes.
What state are you from?
Oklahoma.
Go ahead. You got the mic, Amanda.
A friend of mine just told me basically what to push, and so I've been listening to you guys, and I'm glad that you guys are in part of everything that's going on. Good. I have a bankruptcy case. I have I've been kind of like blackballed at every angle you can think of with my life and chaos and all kinds of problems, and it doesn't matter where I go, I'm just getting stopped. But I got this bankruptcy case because I was trying to save my home, and I just had a lot of things coming to me from every angle, and found out that I had someone that was living here that was sabotaging me, and basically he was released out of his prison sentence to be able to stay here to detain me, I guess, or cause chaos and problems. But it got to the point where that I've got my home at the bankruptcy. It went to foreclosure, and when I was trying to cry out to my family for them to understand that I have been surveillanced in every way, and they just wouldn't believe me, so I tried to get them to come to the lake, get them to know. I couldn't get no help from nowhere. So my home almost went to this short sale, and I got a writer to help to kind of do a restructure on my loan. That was too close, so saving it from...
Let me ask you a question. Are you still pursuing bankruptcy? Have you gone through it? Are you still pursuing it, or are you moving in a different direction to restructure?
No, I. That's why I didn't know what to do. I wouldn't get no help.
There is a form of filing bankruptcy that's a restructure. That puts everyone, gives you time to try to restructure yourself to try to
deal. Cool.
So, in each district, okay, they can send you to a place. And I found out this not too long ago. Actually, I've always been looking. It's a hidden thing. They just don't want you to know anything. All these cases like bankruptcy, if you go and you call the clerk at the bankruptcy court and ask them where you can get information on bankruptcies coming in, as you use the word pro se, they understand that word best, so use that word. Synonym is what I use, but pro se, you tell them. There's a handbook that you should be able to get from these, and all the courts have this. They have these handbooks on the different structures of law that you might be going into and dealing with, so you might want to get that. Filing bankruptcy is actually quite easy, at least I thought it was. I got some information, and I just followed the structure and put everything together and filed bankruptcy quite some time ago, and everything went in nice and smooth, and that was it. If your house is, will you have a concern with a Homestead Act, not the Homestead Act, but with losing your property, and is your house listed as the home under the Homestead Act?
Yeah, I think that I did file a homestead on it, yes.
Okay, because anytime you buy a home, the lawyer automatically should do that for you. And so they can't take your home, in the bankruptcy. So you get to keep your home. The other thing is I think they allow you one car. If you have two or three cars, you're going to have to sell them, but they'll allow you one car. So you have to go through. I know the bankruptcy laws changed since I was involved with it, going back 30 years. And I knew nothing about the law back then. You can do it yourself if you want to go that route. But then, of course, there's different degrees that you can file for restructure. And it gives
I
you
know,
that.
But I can't interrupt you, though, to shorten it so you know. I'm about ready to lose it, I think. I've tried legal aid. I've tried, and I get... blackballed in every angle. I think there's an entity out there that can connect with these people, and it doesn't matter what it is. I've got cancer now, and I've got I can't. My doctors,
what you need to do, what you need to do is, and maybe someone else. Look at what I think. What I think you should do is this. I don't know if there's anyone, Gerard, or anybody that knows a little more about bankruptcy. There's different degrees. I think it's like filing a Section 13 or something. I'd forget what it's called. But if you call them up and tell them that you're on the verge of filing bankruptcy, but you really want to try to work things out, and ask them for information on restructuring, and the courts will protect you during a time period of restructuring. Everything comes to a standstill and allows you that time to restructure and make a plan to deal with your problems and try to get back on track without going through the bankruptcy in itself. And again, the other thing is the book. And because it's statutory, I just follow through the process in the book. It is pretty simple. It's like, it's pretty cut and dry, I think. Okay, but you got to be careful, and you got to understand what you're doing, because when you file bankruptcy, they don't keep a record. You do get the papers, but they don't keep a record. I don't know why they don't, but that's what they told me. And so you got to keep a record of that stuff. And so if anybody tries to come back for you for money, you pull that record out, and there's each one of your creditors, there's a paper that is actually, it's got certified paper. A document that's done by the court. They put a stamp on it, and it was served onto these people. That's it. They can't come and bother you no more. But if you don't have that paperwork and you lose that paperwork or you don't keep that paperwork, you'll find these people climb right back up on your back and try to take your money again. So yeah. You have to be very careful going through it. The other thing is, and this should be taught in school. We talk about this all the time. But on our website, you're coming in on a phone. You're not coming in on an app on your phone. No, I guess you're coming straight in on your phone, right? Cell phone.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure.
I think they're, to tell you so that we can, so you'll know where I'm at, is they've already filed an order of abandonment and lift the stay. And I was trying to get attorneys, and because it's a pansy crybaby excuse, but I'm just totally wore out, hurt, and I don't know, I just, I'm usually a strong person, and for some reason I feel like I'm just frozen, and I'm not getting no help or anything, and just, so I think I just messed it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to give up and fight at the same time.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, we don't realize that we need to know the law. You know, you're never going to be really free and liberated until you know the law. And the law is simple, you know, but it takes time. You got to learn it. And but my point I'm trying to make, though, is this, is that, you know, we need to teach our children this so when they come out of school, they can take care of their own legal business. But we do, we did put a course together. It's found in, when you come up to nationallibertyalliance.org. On our blue tab, you'll see education starts here. If you highlight that and you come down to court access in the common law and you click on that, and that'll give you information on a course that I had given back in 23, I guess it was. Let me see, between, yeah, 2023 I did this course, and we put it up there. So you could take this course. It's, I believe it's a 90-hour course. It's a video course. And that'll give you a good understanding of due process and the structure of the courts and how things work and how to write papers as far as putting papers together. You know, how to write a paper in itself, you learn that mostly by reading other cases. We have lots of cases. You want to learn how to write, you go to our federal court cases on a, you know, in a blue bar, and come down to action against the judiciary, or you come down to, you know, the federal court case itself. And you read through these cases, these papers we've written, okay, you will learn how to write by reading those cases, okay? But as far as structuring the necessary paperwork to open up a court of record and filing a case, you know, we teach you all that. It's called due process, to go through discovery and all the different things. Everybody should know these things. And anybody that doesn't have a legal problem right now, and you know, you're going to kick yourself later in life if you don't go get this an understanding now, because some point in time, you or your spouse or your children or whatever may find yourself in a situation, and then you go to look to say, what am I going to do? You know, you can go get a lawyer and give them a fortune, because that's what they charge, fortunes. It's ridiculous. Justice Justice is very expensive, and even with all the money you pay, you still don't get justice anyway. You're paying for injustice just to get injured more, because that's all they do is they injure you more usually, especially if you're going up against status quo. But anyway, that's what you need to do is go learn due process by taking that course. And
I went up against Bard, Sierra Bard, in the court in West Virginia, and in a mass litigation, and I held 50 documents myself with God, and it was a miracle, and they were evil, as I was pro se, they were doing everything wrong. I mean, if somebody would still look at the documents and stuff, you'd see how wrong that they were, those attorneys at for C.R. Bard, what they did was unjust. But I was capable of it then, but I'm just saying, what I'm trying to say...
Well, do what you need. Who's coming to take you home? And did they get a court order to take you home? Is some kind of a judgment?
Yeah, foreclosure.
Oh, it's a foreclosure.
I'm trying to save my home.
Whoa, hold on. Let me, a foreclosure, you can probably, how long are they pursuing your foreclosure? When did they make the notification?
The sheriff's sale was on the 18th of September.
Are they at the point they're auctioning your home off now?
Well, I got it and went and filed it into the bankruptcy court to get a stay to hold it, and it's just days go by and things, and I've been trying to beg for help
I don't think the bankruptcy court's going to help you with that, because it's a tax thing, it's a bank thing, and you're going up against the banksters. But there is a situation. Look, at you may lose the home, but you might be able to get it back another time, or at least be compensated for them stealing your home, because they're doing what's called a non-judicial foreclosure. You need to learn what a non-judicial foreclosure is. And again, our course, we teach about that. When they come out after you, we do have information on a website under Education Starts Here. Let me see what I got. I may have something on foreclosure. You come down to law, and you come over to court forms and process. Okay? And let's see if I have anything on bankruptcy here. I don't remember whether I have anything here on that. I'm talking about foreclosure. Hold on. You need to listen to what I'm saying. This is key. This is the only way we're going to save your situation here, is to understand what I'm talking about right now. Okay? It's called a non-judicial foreclosure. There is no other foreclosure but a non-judicial foreclosure. Why is it a non-judicial foreclosure? It moves it into an administrative process, and they make it look like it's a court of law. They make it look all lawful. They make it look like they can take it away from you and so on, but they can't, okay? And they actually go into the courts, but the courts really don't really make a decision that goes onto the record for this process, because it's non-judicial foreclosure, because they don't have the power to do it. Because of where the money comes from and how it came to you, it went through the Fed window. The banks or whatever institution that's coming out after you have nothing in the game. In other words, there's no what's the word I'm looking for? There's no skin in the game from them. Okay. In other words, they were just the bank or whoever set this up for you was the person who just came out and set the loan up. Okay, and they get from that, they get a point or a half a point or a quarter, whatever it is that works out for that loan, they get that. But the money comes from the Fed window, okay? So when they go to that process, now they're done with. But they'll send you a booklet, and they'll get monthly payments and hit you with the interest and collect it up, and then they start to divvy that out. The bank gets a piece of that or whatever the institution is. They send some money, I guess, to the government, and however that works out, I don't know the details behind the scenes stuff. But the bottom line is, okay, you're paying something to people that don't have any power or authority to take that, okay? Now, we did a paper on this, and we give instructions on this, on how to deal with this particular problem. And it's called, let me see if I find it on this page, Memorandums, Downloads, Enforcement, Habeas Corpus, Move for Cause, Challenge Jurisdiction, Traffic, Common Law Trust, Demand for Oaths. Okay, I don't have it in here. But it is in our course, information on that. And I know on the website, I think we have it up there too, which is called a non-judicial foreclosure. So You need to learn about that, because that in itself can potentially save your home. But it sounds kind of late for that, because you're saying that the sheriff is ready to come with the paper because the court gave him a paper.
Well, the document I got is the notice of abandonment and list to stay.
Okay, stop. You got to listen. Listen very carefully, because they play games with words. Abandonment, that all of a sudden rings a bell in my brain. It's a problem. Listen, what they will do, okay, is they'll try to dispossess you, okay? And if the sheriff comes out with a dispossess, well, that's a problem, because that's power, and it's an abuse of power. He doesn't know about it. But the thing is that what they did is they played a game to turn your property into them being the ownership and you being a tenant. And it's already written up, I believe, that way anyway, in the papers anyway. But the bottom line is they come in, and they're really throwing you out, because they're saying that you're the renter, okay? You're the tenant, and we own the property. We want you out. And once they make the change of the paper, how long has this been going on for? It must have been going on for quite a few years, right?
No, it just started, the closure started in June, I think.
Okay, look, they're not, I don't think you understand to be able to articulate to me what needs to be articulated so I can understand better, but I can assure you, if it just started in June, they cannot have progressed that far. I tried to work something out for my niece who went through a divorce, and they came and they served her notice, and she had to leave the house, and they kicked her out. And I said, throw the paper away, don't worry about it. You don't have to. They're not coming to bother you. As long as you stay here and live in this house, it's going to take them years to throw you out. You're going to have to go to court. I'll help you out with that. But the bottom line is, you know, even if you lose at the end of the day, you could be here 4, 5, 6, 7 years before they actually throw you out. So you'd be living for free. You don't have to pay the tax. You don't have to pay nothing. You don't have to pay the mortgage.
It was that way before.
All right. Anyway, it's too complex for me to give you any more information other than to tell you need to take our course or find a course somewhere else that someone has given you a course that you can understand these things. But I got to move on to the next caller, because we're running out of time. We've got a lot of people here in the queue.
Okay, so there's nothing I can file on?
Nothing that I could think of. I mean, there's, again, I don't understand enough about your case, because none of this makes sense if they start in June and you're out this month. It's just that doesn't work that fast. It doesn't happen.
Well, they're saying that they are happening faster, like before it was, years ago. Let me ask you,
who was saying this, a lawyer?
People that called me about to buy my house.
Forget about those people. They don't mean nothing on this case. Did the sheriff call you to tell you that he's got a paper, or did they serve you notice that they sent the sheriff that there was a decision made, the sheriff's coming? Do you have any information on it? Then what, you're worrying about something, just don't leave your house. And then learn what you need to do. You have time, but you have to go to court. Every time you have a court date, you got to go to court, and you have to give them a hard time. And they'll
go on and on.
Yeah, they're going to do this every month in, month out. They're going to try to wear you down, but you better get educated if you want to save your home. Take the course. That's the best I can tell you. And work from there. I also have a book called Court Access in the Common Law. You can go out and purchase the book also. You can find that under the Welcome tab here. Come down to Books by John Nerash. And you'll see here Court Access in the Common Law. If you click on that, you'll get lots of information. You click here to order for details. Gives you details on the book and then where to order the book. So you could do that too. Give me a call next week. Let me know how you make out. Go to court and give them a hard time and tell them you're looking for counsel. You can't take my home. This is my home.
Just a hardship letter, basically?
Don't worry. Well, I don't know about a hardship letter. If you got one, that I guess could be helpful. But the point is you go to court and you deny them anything over you. Tell them that, I'm not sure. Let me think about what you can say. The best thing to do is tell them, look, this is my home. I'm trying to get counsel, and I just need time. You people need to back off. They'll say fine to that anyway. Believe me, there's lots of, you got to go for a long time before they actually get to that point. They have things that they have to do in order for them to feel comfortable that they're not going to be held liable. Okay? And then you need to go study, read. Consider bankruptcy also. That might be able to protect you because I don't think you're at a point where it wouldn't.
I have nothing on my credit except for my house.
The problem is you're dealing with the status quo. The bankruptcy, I do not believe they're going to protect you. Matter of fact, I think they're very, very specific. They don't deal with IRS as far as keeping them at bay, and also probably the mortgages or the banks, because that's their game. That's who they are, the banksters, you know? Anyway, I got to move to the next caller.
Can I ask you one more question? Does this motion before they received this one was a motion for relief from automatic stay and notice of intent to seek abandonment of property, waiver of Rule 4001A3, and then brief in support thereof and notice of opportunity for hearing?
This is all the beginning process. All of this stuff is the beginning process. You have to go in there and deny everything and say, look, I'm working on things. I got to get legal counsel. These people are trying to steal my home from me. Okay? We give you papers and everything that you can write up through this course on how to deal with the bankruptcy. The bankruptcy is a fraud. The whole thing is it's a non-judicial foreclosure. Both the mortgage companies and the tax, both of them use it. Same thing. Okay? Okay. It's a fraud. Okay?
Thank you. Yes.
And let me know how you make out next week.
Right? Oh, well, thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, take our next person. FW. Oh, we got you right. Let me see if we can get to the next person. Okay, Burnett, what's your first name and your state? Burnett, you got the mic at Gmail. One more call for Burnett, B-U-R-N-E-T-T. You got the mic. Go right ahead. Okay, we'll go to our next caller. California, you got the mic. What's your first name? 415 area.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Hi, my name is Yesenia, and I live in California.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, right, me too. I think I'm the only one here standing alone in this island by myself. Anyways, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm calling because I actually got a few of these books of you guys, The Common Law Handbook for Jurors, Sheriffs, Bailiffs, and Justices. And then... Yep. For the grand jury and then the UCC connection. I'm actually looking at all of them right now in front of me, Meet Your Straw Man. And I started getting, you know, deep, well, not deep, but like I started getting into a lot of this stuff back in 2020 when the pandemic hit. And that ruffled a lot of feathers for my ex-husband. And so he didn't like that I was actually getting these books and that I was just this conspiracy theorist and, you know, the list goes on and on. Well, fast forward to now, 2024, he actually filed for divorce because of it, because I kept looking into stuff like this and I kept saying, no, I don't think we're supposed to pay taxes. I don't think this. And I think that the, you know, our all caps name is like, you know, our business name that they divorce us into commerce. And, you know, obviously I have, to him, been on drugs or something like that for even mentioning stuff like this. And unfortunately, he left the home and I became a single mom. And he was pretty much my husband for 15 years. And because of this, this kind of pretty much, I guess, was the last straw for him. I don't know. And it caused me to go into a lot of financial hardship, you know, being a single mom and that he left the home and everything. And so I kind of had to decide about like bills and like my home and all of that. And so I had a mental breakdown because I couldn't upkeep everything by myself. And then I was having issues at work and I kind of whistleblowed at work. And I think that's just what I am, a whistleblower, because I think we're trying to say, hey, this is not right. What's right is right. And what's wrong is wrong. I think by nature, that's just how I am. And I guess it's like a blessing and a curse at the same time. So I've been off of work for the last, 9 months. And I'm supposed to go back in December. And while I've been off, again, I've been, you know, going through some hardships and learning about all of this and then learning about writing up conditional acceptance letters. I don't know if you've heard of those.
Well, okay, there's a lot of people teaching a lot of things on the internet that's going to get you in trouble. You know, I went to the School of Hard Knocks through a lot of those things, and not that a lot of them are wrong, you know, like the caps, you know, they're not wrong in what they're saying, you know, but it's what they're saying and the approach they use, and that's problems, okay? There are lots of ways to fight a case without getting into the man on the land stuff, quote unquote, you know, because that is only going to, they're going to call you crazy. But when you bring the law in and lay it out in Supreme Court rulings and the founding fathers, and you bring in our founding documents and maybe your state constitution, and you fight your case from those positions, they can't rebut it. They can't. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to win because they're evil and the courts are corrupt. But we're coming to a time, they're on notice now. They know.
Right.
It's all over for them. Their time is short, okay? So they got 2 months. But any case that you're pursuing now or anything like that, it's going to take months before you get really into the nuts and bolts and really get deep down in the case, and you should be on the other side of devolution at that point. And that being the case, you have a good chance of winning. And you write a good paper, but it takes time to learn to write a good paper.
So I've been actually doing these conditional acceptances, and I've been working on these since August. And so
I don't know
I'm
what
based...
conditional acceptances.
I guess for example, so because I've been dealing with a lot of hardships with like credit cards and like my car note and all of that, and then I've come to learn that you can't pay debt with debt, and that's just how we're kind of drawn into the system. That because we become, you know, United States citizens or our straw man, that's how they are.
But
able
again,
to, like,
you know, here you go. Look at again. You bring those things up. You're a wacko.
Oh no! I don't put that into the. I don't put that into the paper. I'm just saying this for our meeting, right? For the meeting that. Yeah. No, I don't. I don't say, you know, the straw man and.
Yeah,
you know,
the straw man is true, you know, and but the thing is you don't want to use that in case the UCC handbook you got. You probably see National Liberty Alliance in there. The person who put that together really kind of took things off of our website, added some stuff in there, and then posted it up, and they put the connection to our website up there for more information. But we didn't write that book. We're not teaching people that approach. Not that not that the information in the handbook is wrong, okay?
Right.
But there's another way to deal with it, okay? I've won an IRS case, okay? Only had one hearing. One hearing is all it took. I had three positions. And I'm not sure, which I do think now I know which one, but the three positions I had, okay, within 2-3 weeks, I got an apology letter from the IRS. I got a release of lien for the money that they claim they owed me. And then they also said in the letter that I'm not liable to pay taxes for those years. And that was a win. And how did I win? I won that by using, the law, okay? And the common law particularly, but the law. I used the law and the Supreme Court rulings and numerous other things. But, you know, again, you can win all these cases coming in from another perspective. And, again, it's all fraud. They're not going to bring up the fraud, so don't you bring up the fraud, because when you bring up the fraud, they say, oh, you're crazy, okay? But it is all fraud, and they're going to pay dearly for it now because they've injured a lot of people.
Right. I think my question right now is because I'm in the, like, so basically the conditional acceptance, what I understand from it is that basically when you get these, you know, offers, if you will, of like, you know, claiming that you owe them something, like, for example, a credit card debt, right? Or not a credit card debt, like a collection, collection agency that buy the debts or whatever, and then they come knocking on your door and saying you owe them. So then you would conditionally.
Right, again, it's a party you have no knowledge of. You have no agreement with them. Go away.
Right, exactly.
That's
but
true.
Because you have to respond in order for them to go away and perform, right? Because
but your response has got to be using the law instead of the fraud that they're executing, because first of all, you're touching a raw nerve when you start talking to them about those things in the courtroom, okay? That's number one. But, you know, but again, then they mock you as a crazy, and most of them think you are crazy. Most of these bar attorneys think you're nuts. They don't think people are equipped or able to go in there without taking their bar school courses, okay?
Right.
And so on and so forth. But look, at you going with the law, you can kick butt on any of these cases. You know, read our papers, and you can see a lot of things in there that you'll be able to use. Lots.
So I guess I would need, like, I don't know, guidance in some way, because I'm being told that they're going to repossess my car because I haven't had the chance to be able to pay everything on my own with the house and my kids here and, you know, food on the table and everything. So I've let go of some bills that it was either that, or, you know.
Repossessing your car, okay, you bought a car through a loan, correct?
Correct.
Okay, because you didn't lease it, or you didn't buy it with the possibility, you're paying payments with the possibility of owning. It's really kind of a lease anyway, because you miss two payments, they'll come and tow your car. Okay, so if they're going out after you for your car, they can't touch your car until they get a court order. So you better pay attention and get to court and give them a hard time in court and then move things along to be able to deal with that. You know, that's a tough one to, you know, what really is horrible about that is, let's say you have a vehicle and you may be paying your last year. Maybe you got a four-year loan and you paid for 3 years. So you've given them a heck of a lot of money. Now they come and repossess the car, okay? Well, what stands to right under common law, well, if you're going to take my car away from me and you're going to go out and sell it, well, you could take what I owe you, but I want the rest, okay? They don't do that. Same thing with your home when they take your home and they do a foreclosure. But the foreclosure in itself is all unlawful. We let that out. It's a fraud. And again, use the proper papers in the court. You can win because you're making the argument. Now, you're not going to win in an evil and corrupt court, but I think the things are changing now. I think we may have that opportunity because they're getting nervous now. And I'm pretty bold in my paper writing now. I let it be known we're going after people.
I mean, I guess I was pretty bold, and I'm writing my last, I guess, letter to the bank in response to them saying that they're going to come and pick up my car, and I'm pretty much, you know, putting the maximum laws on there.
They cannot take your car without a court order.
Well, here's the thing. So I'm putting in there, like, you know, I asked for full disclosure of the agreement that we have because I've come to find out that banks can't actually loan money. So what exactly are you loaning? You know, and so because they failed to do all of that, so now my question, I guess, is, you know, once I send this letter out and I'm basically saying, okay, now you're in default because you failed to provide one, all of the bullet points that I asked you to provide for me for the contract that I signed with you to give me full disclosure of what exactly I signed, because
Let me ask you another question. The people who are coming out, are they the ones that made the loan, or did they sell that to a group of lawyers or somebody, or what?
No, so the loan was through Wells Fargo. So Wells Fargo is the one coming out to me.
All right, so you're going through, okay. Now, with that, let me think about this a minute. And how much do you, how many more payments do you owe?
About maybe 2 years of payments still.
Okay, so, and you paid off maybe a year or two?
No, it was a 6-month contract, so I paid off already four years.
Okay, so you've put a lot of money into this car already.
Correct, yeah.
Now,
so,
if you go look on your title, it should have a lien holder on it. Is there a lien holder on it?
They didn't give me my title because you don't get the title until you finish paying off the entire car.
Well, it sounds like you may be in a different kind of thing than you think. Well, I don't know. The bank wouldn't go that way. I don't understand that. I don't know why you wouldn't get a title.
You would get the title once you pay off the loan.
The owner of that car is you. You got the title. You took a loan. It's been paid for. Now there's a liener, and there'll be a lien holder on that title, okay? You should be having that title. You want a copy of the title. Go down to Motor Vehicle and tell them you want a copy of the title and see what's on it. It'd be interesting to find out if they don't have that on that. They got a problem. Find out if they'll lien holder. I doubt that. They don't have it. I'm sure they do have it. But go to Motor Vehicles, tell them you lost your title, you want a copy of the title, and they'll mail it out. Unfortunately, it'll take about 10 days to get, sometimes longer, but you don't get it. But anyway, we got to move on. We only got 10 minutes.
So I'm sorry. I just because I didn't really get to the question that I wanted to get to. Because I've been, and this is maybe your opinion or what you think of this, but I've been told that usually when you go into this commercial, court, that they operate all under commercial codes and it's not actually common law court. And so when I am sending these conditional acceptance things and I copy the witnesses, which is like the Attorney General of California, the United States Attorney General. So those are my witnesses on the letter.
You got a good point that you just sparked something up. There's another strategy you can use, but you have to have some knowledge to use this strategy. And again,
right.
You need to have to take these courses. You can go in and you can challenge the jurisdiction because they don't have the jurisdiction over you because you're not agreeing to a chancery court or a civil law court. What you need to do is open up a court of record. They don't even understand what that means, but there is a process and a procedure to do that. It's just putting a few words in there in this court of record. I'm countersuing, blah, 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 whatever the case may be. But the thing is once you've opened your court of record, then you shut that court down because they don't have jurisdiction over you. They don't have personam jurisdiction. Why don't they have personam jurisdiction? Because it's a civil law court operating as a chancery court. Now, that's an argument that could be won in righteousness. Whether it could be won in a court these days, well, it hasn't been able to, but we're coming to very strange times, you know.
Okay.
You make a good argument. They got to rebut it now. And remember, they opened the court, so they got to answer your questions. And you got to go through discovery. You got to learn how to do these things. And I know it's a lot to throw onto you, but and it may not be enough time. That's unfortunate with a lot of people that come in here. It's like tomorrow I'm going to lose my home or this is going to be thrown out of the house or whatever the case may be. It's like at the last moment. But it's you may have some time. How long have they been pursuing you and how long have you been not paying?
For 3 months now.
Okay, why don't you call them up and say, hey, look, I got a problem. Times are hard. Why don't I pay a payment and get back on board and I'll pay the other two payments towards the end or maybe if times get a little better, I'll be able to give you a little more. Do you be able to work a deal out with them?
I guess my whole thing is that because what I've been learning through common law is that we're not supposed to be in debt because of the whole situation with the gold and everything that happened where they took it from us. And so they promised us that basically, you know, we're not supposed to even be in this kind of situation. And now they're just continuing to steal from us. So I'm kind of, I guess, standing on being righteous.
You know, you're talking about moving off the gold standard and you're using debt to pay debt. Is that what you're talking
Correct.
About?
Yes.
You're not going to win under that. See, that is exposing the fraud. And they're not going to allow that to happen. You understand? You got to come from a different perspective, a different direction. And one of the things, if you're only 2 or 3 months behind, a phone call, and I would record this phone call and write an affidavit over this phone call, depending on their response, and ask them whatever their response is, can you respond back in writing? As a matter of fact, you should be doing this in writing back and forth and demand that no communications take place other than in writing. And everything you write, you get your letter, you send it in, you could do a notice and demand depending, I'm not sure what perspective you might come in on that, but I'm sure you could work one out where you do what's called a notice and demand. Again, we have a notice demand example under education tab, and of course we teach about a notice and demand in our court case, in our court course. So, but the thing is you should be able to make a deal with them, and just pick up the payments on the two last payments or whatever it is on the end.
Okay.
No reason why they shouldn't. And when you go into court, you got a good case to make from another perspective as well as many other perspectives. But one of the other ones is, look, I tried to work this deal out. Times are hard. You know, inflation's crazy. The dollar has lost 26% of its power just in the past 4 years. People can't even pay their electric bills and food is outrageous and things are tough. I fell behind. And these people won't give me the opportunity. They want to now steal the car and my entire investment that I put into this vehicle to pay for it. They want to steal it from me. And they won't give me an opportunity to work a deal out. I mean, that's an argument you can make later on if you can't work a deal out with them.
Okay.
I got to move on to the next. You got to get educated.
Thank you.
Everybody needs to get educated. Or you don't know your liberties. You can't exercise your liberties because you don't know them. You don't know when they're abusing you and your liberties. And you don't know how due process works. And they'll beat you every time if you don't understand that process. So,
Thank you.
We'll talk another time. Thank you. Okay, we'll take another caller here. It's getting close to the end. Victoria, you got the mic. What's your state? Victoria, you got the mic. What's your state?
Oh, hi there, yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. You only got a couple of minutes, though. But
okay, right. My question is just going back to what you were speaking about earlier with the sheriffs. Have you ever had the situation where you have had to recall any of them?
Recall a sheriff or anyone?
Yes, and has
no,
that been?
We haven't done that yet, but there is a process for recall, yes. But we haven't done it yet. We intend on, we teach it, and we're going to be using it. But you, if you're looking to recall a sheriff, first opportunity is really try to see if you can get the sheriff to realize his ignorance and decide to get educated. And that's a very... You know, it's a very touchy thing on how you deal with that. That's why through a committee of safety, if you work and build a committee of safety, and when you give them your papers, on your committee of safety, which, you know, is resolution, for instance, in there in the charter, then they'll see and understand they're going to be recalled if they're not going to go learn their job. And you're giving them enough information. We have a plan on this, enough information to make them realize this is the way you're supposed, a sheriff is supposed to be, not what you're doing. This is what a sheriff is. And if they don't respond correctly, then you got to recall them. And that's true with any of your elected representatives.
Right. Okay. Thanks for answering.
But go to... you're coming in on an app or a browser?
Yes.
Yeah. Go to Start a Committee of Safety. I don't know if you were here earlier when I put this out. I think you were, but anyway. Start a Committee of Safety. Come back to the Handbook Videos and Tools. Click on that. And come down to the Sheriff. And watch that video here. Meet Your Sheriff Plan. Okay? Now, also, we have a handbook on creating a Committee of Safety that you can also download for free here. On a PDF right underneath these videos, and it's more information on the sheriff inside that handbook, which is, you know, creating a committee of safety. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. All right, well, we've come to the end of our program. Well, we'll see if we can just take, if we can do this in 1 minute. We've got 1 minute for Mary Ann from Indiana.
Hi there. Hi, John. A quick question for you.
Yeah.
I am trying to promote constitutional training and stuff. And I did the civic study course through you guys, and I have my certificate. Mm-hmm. Very proud of it, from 2018. And I was looking at the what I was thinking is a K-12, because I think we talked about this before, that at the end of high school, they're considered an adult, and they should be able to argue pro se in a common law court.
Right.
So
lawyers should almost become obsolete. You're right, absolutely. And we do look at, there's an education that we need to develop because it doesn't exist, okay? Ultimately, to some degree, it does. With a lot of the information that we've put together here at National Liberty Alliance, we can kind of put together different courses for different levels. We need to work with maybe someone who is an educator and really understands the mentalities from the K all the way through 12 and, and other things that, you know, we may not understand or know, in order to make sure we put together a program that starts with a little bit of information, even all the way down to first grade. You know, a little bit of information on a lot of different subjects, on civics, on the Constitution, on law, but something very, very weak in the beginning, you know, just something to start feeding the children at a very young age. And by the time they get into the third grade, you get a little stronger. By the time they get into the eighth grade, you should really be able to get very heavy into things. Because if we have a true education, a proper education, we got rid of all the crap, and we put in serious, and we go to a classical education. And from the perspective of a classical education, we don't teach the children what to think. We teach them how to think. It's a whole different perspective from the way they've been working with things. And that's where you got to go. I think classical education, by the time they're getting into the seventh to eighth grade, they should be moving into some of the books, you know, for a classical, you know, education. Definitely by first year, you know, going into the ninth grade, first year high school, definitely at that point they should be into the great books. We should be able to give our children, if properly put together, a proper education could be given, and children could be coming out of high school, 12 years of school. By the time they come out of that 12th year, they should have what is equivalent to and even better than a college education. Now, for further education, for doctrine, your doctrinal or something, that's a whole different story. You need an extended education. But generally speaking, if we go back in history, we do hand out, there's an eighth grade test. It's, you can find that here, again, on the same page, Starter Committee of Safety, come down to handbooks. And there is a paper here called the eighth grade test. Let me see, eighth grade test, 1895. This was an eighth grade test. This is college level. Eighth grade test in 1895, okay? You read through this and you can realize if children have a proper education and it is given to them from the perspective of teaching them how to think, not what to think, they'll come out with a college education. They can come out with the ability of being their own lawyer and take care of their own business and knowing civics, understanding government by consent, knowing the Constitution, how the political process works, how due process works. I mean, they should know all these things, okay? Just because 12 years is a long time, okay? And again, I know, you know, I sent my youngest son went to a Christian school, really good Christian school. By the second grade, he was reading at a seventh, eighth grade level, okay? Mm-hmm. And all children can do that, you know. I mean, yeah, some children are a little slow, you know, they have a particular problem that they can't help. You know, if you deal with children correctly, and you give them a good, and you come with a proper mindset and looking to really get the child to become active and think instead of memorize. I've learned, you know, that, you know, and I dropped out. My highest grade I completed was eighth grade. I mean, I went into ninth grade, but I never finished it. And you know, I just didn't do well in school. But until I came to certain realizations, I don't have to remember anything. And I don't try to remember anything. I just try to understand everything. Every word, every sentence, every paragraph. If I don't understand, I go back and I don't leave it until I understand. Once I understand, I move on. And when you go through the process that way, it sticks in the brain. You know, it's like, you know, because now you understand it. Okay, may not be able to articulate it for a while, but as time goes on, especially with things being repeated, because education will always bring you to different areas over and over again anyway, so it'll be repetitive, and so it'll stick to your brain. I mean, it's just like a child learning to talk. You know, you're not, you have to sit them down and teach them how to talk. It just happens because of the desire to do so, to communicate. And if you keep working off of that kind of thinking, you know, the brain, you can absorb anything and be good at it, whatever it is that your great desire is for. But we have to get our children classical education. We have to teach our children civics and common law. We have to teach them about our founding fathers, of course, all the basics, you know, math and the sciences and so on. But American history is extremely important.
I'm sorry. I do have a question for you, though. I I know that Hillsdale College, they actually have a K through 12 curricula. It's classical. And I was wondering if you would be open to at all collaborating, if you would be interested in communicating with them, if I could set something up so that there can be more, definitely in at least the, 9 through 12.
I would be very interested in that, because I was planning on doing something for education, next step open, because we're moving to a different thing now, once we get past this year and Trump gets in power and things start to get developed correctly. But, the problem with Hillsdale is it's too, they don't understand common law. That is probably the major problem. They talk about the Constitution, they say certain things, but then they fall short because they don't take it all the way. To take it all the way is, I am sovereign. I make the law. I am the lawmaker. They don't understand the difference between the court system we have going right now, which is civil law, and what we should have, which is common law. At least I don't see that they understand it. Now, I know the president, he's an extremely bright individual. He's very highly educated. He's a ferocious reader, so he's absorbed a lot. But with all that said, he still lacks common law.
Well, he studied in England. So that might be where there's the gap there. But I noticed that, too, when I was I'm studying the Constitution course that they have online. They have free courses online. So I've been studying those. I'm like, yeah, this could definitely use a more of a common law application. There's studying the Constitution, then there's the actual application of what you're learning in real life. I mean, because the Constitution is not just an ethereal thing. It's actually hit the ground running and use it and when you're defending your rights, you're actively using the Constitution to defend your rights.
We have to have the proper mindset.
Right.
We have to be able to think free, and only after we think free are we able to start exercising it, and when we start exercising our thinking, that's when we become free. Until then, we're not really free. We're still caged in, whether we realize or not. We're stuck in this statutory prison that they've created for us that's about to be shattered. We have the opportunity of escaping. We have the opportunity of retaking back what is ours. But the people have to be willing to spend time to be re-educated, if I might use a word like that, because that's exactly what needs to be done. There's so much garbage in our brains that they've been putting there since we were little children, and it's been going on for a very, very long time, long before I was born. And so there's a lot of garbage in our brains, and we have to reset ourselves. So we have to kind of, clean up our hard drive in our brain, so to speak, and start to rebring things in there that, to give us the proper structure and the foundation and work from that. So, it's as far as schooling and particularly, in the common law part of the thing, or law, shall I say, you have to go back to the basics. And one of the unfortunate things is that once you go back to the basics, you start to see a lot of problems that you've created and written, people who wrote books and different things, and it becomes, sometimes people, I remember talking to an individual, and the foundation of the book was an error. And when I was talking with them, I tried to kind of bring that point out, but there was no way that they invested so much time that, they're not going to buy it. So that's a problem. It is a problem. But everybody has error. I have error. Everybody has error. Only Jesus Christ didn't have error. Okay? So, I know even in my book, I think of a few things I'd like to get back and maybe redo a few paragraphs here or there. One mistake I saw in my books that I had written was that I was at a point in my thinking at that point earlier on that equity, that the laws that the court, the rules of the court that they made up would be okay to use it in equity courts, but you can't use it in natural law courts. Now, that's a true statement. It's half a true statement. The bottom line is that even our equity courts are under common law, and they cannot use the rules. They must use the rules of common law in the equity courts, because we're under American jurisprudence, and American jurisprudence lays out the common law, gets back to logic. That's why we, the people, have the ability in a court to be able to nullify any written law that they may bring up, okay? And there sometimes there's a case where the laws do apply on an individual that maybe is working in or doing something commercial activities, or so regulations and statutes apply towards them in their business, or maybe they're an agent of some agency, and whatever agency that is, you know, there's statutes and regulations that apply to them. And so in a court that you might be a jury of, whether it be a civil or a criminal court, you know, in any event, it should be common law court. The bottom line, if there's a jury there, it is a common law court. And if it's a common law court and they bring up a statute to apply to a person that agreed to those statutes, well, we still have the power to nullify it. We may say, hey, it doesn't ring true to me. You know, it doesn't hold up to, you know, the rules of common law. It's not logical. I don't like it. So we nullify it, okay? Or maybe it's a good statute, but in this case, we don't like it. It doesn't work. And so we have that power and authority. People have to understand that power and authority, though. You see, that's the mindset you have to have. You are the judge in a court of law when there's a jury, and the judge can't, that the person who appears to be the judge is really a magistrate. They don't have any authority to say anything to you to apply the law this way or that way, nor do they have the power to correct you. You are the final arbiter in that courtroom. With the other 11 people, of course. You know?
Well, unless, of course, the thing is you can't even bring up jury nullification, they'll arrest you.
Of course not. Yes. Yeah, they'll you're right. That's where we're at. But times, they are changing. The winds of change have hit us. We're here. In a couple of months, it's going to be a whole new world, but brace for impact. It's coming.
Oh, I'm very excited about it. That's why I do think it's, I'm very hopeful that we can get some kind of K-12 that's classic. So classic.
Yeah, if you could set that up and they're willing to talk to me, that's fine. But I doubt they'll talk to me. But maybe they will. Who knows? You know?
Who knows? Yeah, I've been praying about it. So we'll see. I mean, I was happy to see that they had a K-12 classical. So there needs to, I was going to ask them more specifics on that part of it, and then say, well, you know, that could be lacking, because I think that's an important part of being a constitutional republic, is that every person...
Well, it's all loss if they don't have the common law in their teaching, and mm-hmm. That's one of the things, you know, I also, you know, the way... Well, I have a different mindset on how I would educate if I were to educate people, you know, but I'd love to talk with them if they want to talk with me, and fine. But I doubt
okay.
They will. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But with that, we got to end the call because we're late. We're 14, 15 minutes over. So,
well, thank you.
Sorry for everyone else who couldn't get you into the queue, but, well, you're in the queue, couldn't get you on the call. Try to get in to the queue maybe next week, early on, so we'll get you. Okay, with that, good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.